Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behind the badge.
Hi, I'm Paul Listick, and welcome to Behind the Curtain. Well, a lot of people were dismayed when recently Governor Rauner vetoed an action by the state legislature, which was an automatic voting act. It meant when you got your driver's license, for example, you automatically got registered to vote. And hey, doesn't that help participation in elections? One would think so. Governor had some problems with it. One person that wasn't happy about the governor's decision is Cook County Clerk David Orr, who has, of course, been Cook County Clerk for a long time. And thanks for joining me on the podcast. Am I right in saying you're not happy with the governor's veto?
You're exactly right. Well, the bottom line is I guess in politics sometimes you smell certain things, you understand certain things. The governor's veto just made no sense. In other words, he made it sound like, oh, we're all working together and so forth. But the bottom line is that it's simply not true. He basically wanted to delay this until after the 2018 election, which was kind of disappointing, and he wanted to take out the most important provisions. The difficulty, here's what's important about this. And again, this had bipartisan support. Lots of Republicans voted for this. In fact, the Senate vote was 50-7. Okay, so we kind of had our hopes up, and the press conference we had was really organized by all the non-for-profit groups, you know, the Common Causes and Chicago Votes and all those organizations that had worked so hard on this. So here's the key to it. One of the things that I spelled out is that by vetoing this, it means 700,000 people that right now have a driver's license or state ID. They also have their right to vote. They have their, voter registration card.
Right.
The difficulty, they're no longer living at that address. And part of this whole law was to deal with the fact that people move so much. And when you talk about automatic means, we now have data. Government has data. Okay, and we can simply share that data. By the way, it's all secure and so forth. We share that data just for the purposes of updating your registration if you happen to move from Chicago to Bloomington. Okay?
Right.
And so those 700,000 people would have automatically been whole. They would have been fine for participating in the November election. Now they all have to start over.
So this is not just about people who are thinking this is about 18-year-olds, people who are voting for the first time, getting them registered.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's about them, but it's much more.
It's much more because the bottom line behind all this really is efficiency and accuracy and ease. In other words, efficiency, for example, these 700,000 people now, okay, clerks all over the state will be mailing to people that no longer live there that waste money. They'll be sending notices about here's where you vote when they're no longer there. They'll be hiring temps to enter all this data when we wouldn't have to. So there's a lot of inefficiencies created by what the governor did. Makes our list less accurate because I can tell you right now, 700,000 people we know of do not live where, you know, it says they are unregistered. We don't want that. The integrity of our elections are improved by signing this bill, not opposing it. So, I mean, there's a lot of strong reasons why this is a good bill. It's why it was overwhelming support in both the House and the Senate. Now, some people want to turn it into a political situation yesterday, but the bottom line is that these 700,000 people, they're Democrats, the Republicans, or independents. And I, as someone who wants people to participate in the process, you know, so it's so important to me that see all these people out there now, they don't even know that they're not going to be registered. And that's just the impact right now.
Yeah.
And if the governor has his way and can prevent this from taking place until after 2018, means we go through another real big cycle in 2018 for the next governor and also all sorts of other important offices, including county board president.
Let me tackle some of the politics. You know, I had Abe Scar on my Politics Tonight show, and so they didn't want he's great, and they didn't want to go to the he and the other guests didn't want to go to the political aspect of it. You went right there initially because I raised the question, which was one of the issues the governor had was we're not going to be ready for this in January of 18. We need till January of 19. And the first question I raised was, well, that's because he would survive another gubernatorial election. The answer being, we don't want to get into the politics, but you will. You're a politician. Isn't that what that's about?
Again, like I say, I want to give the governor's due, but like I said, I don't buy it. It just doesn't make any sense. The State Board of Elections signed off on this. We're ready to do this stuff now. You know, sure, things take time, but even this, it wouldn't have taken effect until January 2018. So that's plenty of time. So,
yeah.
No, it just, it's these are let's say these are clever politicians with arguments. Remember, in politics, our job is to convince you of certain things, and your job in the media is to try and expose the BS. Okay, and frankly, I feel that that's partly my job too. I think this veto is BS because it doesn't make any sense. Okay.
Now, the governor says he wants to see this. It just needs some changes. He also said there was no pay for it. There is a ramp up cost to this, right?
No, not really. There's very little cost for this.
Well, even Abe Scar said that there was initially just to whatever the systems, there would be some sort of cost.
Okay, but that's very minimal.
Okay.
Keep in mind, we've done other very important things, including ERIC. That is this new data sharing thing that that we passed previously, and that's one the governor fortunately did sign. Okay, and we found money for that. Okay, so we're always, I think, able to find the money that's necessary to do these things. But that is not the obstacle here. Okay, it's clearly not the obstacle. And, you know, you can make it sound nice in your veto session, but, you know, he was not negotiating with hardly anybody but a couple of individual groups, and it was all at the last minute. He wasn't negotiating with people when this was being discussed months ago, when it was being passed overwhelmingly. This was only what I would call a PR thing in the last couple minutes, not with any elected officials, not with his colleagues, Republican and Democrat, who had voted for this, but to some important citizen groups.
Let me put on the skeptic hat again and ask this question. A lot of people think that when you are encouraging people to get registered and they're younger people, whatever, what you're really doing is you're having Democrats vote. To your knowledge, do the studies hold that out?
Well, the studies don't necessarily hold. I mean, again, things change over the years, okay? For example, a long time ago when some of the major reforms in election reform took place, they were supported by some very famous Republicans, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, yes, most politicians will look at, is this going to help us or hurt us, okay? I'm not trying to say I'm better than anybody else, but the bottom line is I look at what's good for the body politic because what might help a Democrat this year may help a Republican next year. Okay, I've pushed strong for early voting because we vote on a holiday. I introduced early voting to the state of Illinois. It's worked. At first, the Democrats were skeptical of it because they said, I've seen research where it helps Republicans. Now everybody agrees it's a good thing. It helps a democracy. That politicians have the right to think about that, but they don't have a right to block policies that help everybody just for their political reasons. And that's what we've been seeing in voter suppression states around the country. And so you should have your skeptical hat on. And like I say, I want to help everybody. I'm not afraid of what might happen. I'd rather have lots of people voting, and if those people are convinced to go with a Republican, so be it. If they're convinced to go with a Democrat. I'm not a fool. I'm not idealistic. I just think the only way democracy works is if you put the voters first and not put these obstacles in their way depend on what their politics are.
Now, where it stands right now, it's been vetoed, and so obviously they could take it up, as you mentioned, in the veto session in November. They could, and actually the votes are there, David, to override the veto.
Well, I think they may be there. Again, we intentionally didn't go there because there's a lot of things involved here. But keep in mind, a lot of Democrats think this is good. A lot of Republicans think this is good. Now, I did mention, and I mean, because I believe in being honest with the public, I mentioned some Republicans are going to be nervous because Governor Rauner, just like Mayor Rahm Emanuel, they collect millions of dollars from questionable sources to smash their opponents. And Rauner has made it clear to everybody, you mess with me and I will spend this money to hurt you. Okay? Mm-hmm. I don't like that kind of politics. I don't believe in it. But both those are Democrat and Republican that have chosen to govern this way. So, frankly, it will be harder to get all those Republicans who voted for this if there is a move to override the veto. I can't tell you yet. I do know that I think there's people of conscience out there of both parties, and we'd hope they'd realize, forget all this politics we're talking about. This makes the integrity of the elections better. It makes it much more efficient. It makes our list cleaner, and it makes it easier for people to move, which they do on a regular basis, and stay registered. So it should be a win-win-win everywhere, regardless of the governor's comments about non-citizens. Reminds me of Trump. It's so silly. He referred to three cases, people have been prosecuted. Well, two of them were thrown out. So what, in 30 years, you can come up with three cases, and two of them are thrown out because the state made the mistake, not the individual citizens.
Now, is this something that can be rectified? Does it have to be a state decision? Can Cook County, which you oversee, do this on their own, or Will County, or DuPage, or the city of Chicago? Or does it need to be statewide?
I wish I could, but no, not in this case. We are doing a lot of other things that are getting us toward that goal. Something called NCOA, National Change of Address Cards. For example, we're doing everything we can to understand the technology. So when somebody moves, like I say, from Chicago to Champaign, and they file a change of address card, okay, so now we know they've moved down there. Now, because we changed the law, that the Champaign County Clerk can register them automatically, and we can take them off our rolls. So it's a win for the voter. It keeps our list cleaner. So we can do that. But no, we couldn't go and do what we want with automatic voter registration on our own.
You need the whole state to play along.
Yes.
And, you know, again, the politics of it for a moment, as you said, sometimes people can be vindictive to those who don't support them. And, of course, recent days have seen Senator Matt Murphy, Representative Ron Sandak. I mean, there's been a few Republicans who have stepped away for whatever personal reasons they seem to have from the legislature. That puts a little more pressure on Rauner. Just your sense, you've been in politics a long time. I mean, this doesn't seem to be as critical to him as turnaround agenda items. What's your read?
I suspect, unfortunately, this is critical to him, or he would have done it. In other words, like I say, if you put all the facts together and you see this had overwhelming support from both parties, okay, it seems to me that the political reality of trying to, let's say, not find ways to make it easier for people to register and vote before the 2018 election, that appears to be a very important thing to him. Because you're right, you'd think otherwise. I mean, if he was serious about these concerns, like about non-citizens or about obeying the federal law, those things could have easily been worked out many months ago. So I can't speak to that. I do believe that the governor has been harmed fairly significant in the last few months. I think a lot of report has been much tougher on him. I think the public's been tougher on him, and that's good. And I see, you know, some of his allies leaving state government because they don't like what's happening. Today's big article about, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars being lost to both Republican and Democratic legislators, to important services for seniors and disabled. These are having an effect. And, of course, the governor would like to blame it all on the Democratic leadership. But so what I'm suggesting is the governor's political problems, to a certain degree like the mayor's political problems, make them more vulnerable. Now, in some ways, that's good, because when he's more vulnerable, you'd think he'd want to be doing the right thing. So, yes, maybe there's a chance that we can, renegotiate this, move someplace on it. But I think still we have to be as forthright as we can. This is a good piece of legislation. It's been done in other states. It is legal, and it will help. And so, therefore, we have to put the burden of proof, so to speak, on the governor, because we don't particularly agree with his explanation.
All right. Well, good clarification. It's election. I don't know if you know this. There's an election going on this year.
Yes, and we're getting ready for it every day. We're preparing the ballot. You'd be surprised how soon that military and overseas can start voting.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you. Just since we're in that season, what message do you have for our listeners who, you know, are thinking of voting? You know, remember, Donald Trump's kids, they forgot to register, so they couldn't vote for dad. Any message for our listeners out there who want to vote or haven't done something yet? What can they be thinking about right now to get ready for November?
Yes, and one of the most important ones is what we're just talking about now, is that the 700,000 people that I mentioned, and there's more than that, are people that think they've registered, but they don't realize they have to re-register when they move. So everybody, if you're being smart, double check. And now remember, there's easier ways to do it nowadays, too. We have online voter registration. You can just take your phone, or you can go online to cookcountyclerk.com, and we can steer you how to register online. So check to make sure that you're registered. I don't want to encourage everyone to phone call because nobody has the staff.
Right.
Any of my colleagues around the state. But ideally, if they can go online and check their registration just to make sure they are. That's important, number one. And then number two, they can start collecting information. But everybody in Cook County will get a mailing from us, which will tell them where their polling place is. So don't worry now. Don't worry 3 months out. We will also tell you when early voting starts, about 2 weeks out, and we'll tell you where the various sites are. We're going to have more sites this time than ever before because it's a presidential election. So we'll have early voting starting about 2 weeks before the election, will have mail balloting starting now. People are even calling now. Now, of course, the ballot's not ready yet. Okay, so, you know, just relax. We'll take your name, and we'll mail the ballots out when they're ready, but that will be not for a while yet. There's still some battles going on about what's even going to be on the ballot. So the main thing is make sure that you're registered, and we will help you to make sure you know where to go, and you have three choices. You can vote by mail. Just we'll send you a ballot. You mail it in. You can vote early in all these various sites, or you can vote on person election day. And don't be afraid of election day, because now with so many of your colleagues voting by mail and voting early, we've not been having a lot of long lines on election day.
Yeah, I've got to say, when I vote on election day, and or maybe sometimes I vote early, but there's never a line. I go right through.
Yeah, now again, I don't want to caution you. In a presidential election, see, Americans are interesting, okay? For a presidential election, there's a good chance that we'll vote 73-75%, you know, high numbers. Whereas sometimes, and even a gubernatorial election, we might only vote at 50%. And in some of these local elections, we might only vote at 30%.
Ah, so this is a big year.
So this is definitely a big year. That's why we'll have, there'll be a lot more visibility. There'll be more opportunities for people to register. There'll be a lot of groups doing things. But the online registration's a really good one now, and that's really good for the young people. We also, for the young ones that are listening, remember, if you're 17, but you'll be 18 before the November election, you can register right now.
Right.
Okay,
yeah.
You don't have to wait around.
In fact, they could have voted in the primaries.
That's right, and those people could have, and in fact, many of them did.
Yeah.
So there are some good things there, but the main thing is just make sure that you're registered from the address that you live at. Because people move, and that's what they tend to forget.
And it messes up.
That's great advice.
Of course,
taking us full circle, that is one of the fundamental reasons why we want this automatic voter registration to pass. We'll keep at it. Other than that, just study the issues. We'll also have a candidate's guide, at least for the county clerk's office. We will ask all the candidates running for office to put together a little background about themselves. Because remember, there's so many candidates, particularly all those judges.
Right. Remember, nobody knows that. People have to do their homework on that. Yeah, people.
Yeah, this is the year when you have all those judges for what we call retention.
Right.
And people kind of go crazy on that. But
do your homework. And look for the papers, because sometimes it's worth seeing the Tribune, the Sun-Times, that, you know, so many different organizations and groups tell you whether they compile all the information of who's recommended and who's not. Do a little homework on those judicial races.
Exactly. There's, you know, the Bar Associations and others put out things that you can just look up online, and they do analysis of all the judges and their temperament and what people have practiced before them think. So that can be very valuable.
All right. Clerk David Orr. By the way, of course, you were mayor of the city of Chicago for a week. If people want to check that out, they can check that out. Do you want to? This is a good time. Do you want to announce either a run for mayor again or governor or anything right now?
No, thanks, Paul. I'm quite content where I am.
All right.
I can't believe I'm still in elective office. It's been around so long. I was a young college professor in 1979 when I got the political bug, and surprisingly, I beat the machine way back then, and I never thought I'd be around this long.
But you are, and for good reason, because if ever there was one honest, straightforward politician, David Orr, you are it.
Well, thank you, Paul. I think there's a lot of others, but I appreciate that.
Thank you. Cook County Clerk David Orr.
Okay.
Thanks for clarifying everything with me. Talk to you again, my friend. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Well, you know her most likely as Sissy, that sort of iconic character from the long-running classic television show Family Fair. I know I grew up with it. But, you know, this next guest has done so much more on stage, television, radio, voiceover, author. She even appeared in a Cecil B. DeMille movie, The Ten Commandments. This woman has been around as a star for a few years. Let me welcome my good friend Kathy Garver. Kathy, good to talk to you as always.
Thank you, Paul. Yes, just a couple years. For
you know, I realized
the Ten Commandment movie.
Yes, I realized as I started going through those credentials, I'm going, oh my goodness, this is starting old. This is sounding old. So no, you're just as young, vibrant as ever.
Yes, I am. And I guess it was God and Cecil B. DeMille that started me on a wonderful path through all those things that you have just mentioned, to do movies and then TV and stage and radio and voiceover and all of those wonderful outlets that are in the entertainment field.
And that is such a fascinating sort of interaction to have to kick off this discussion, because you've written several books in the past, and one of which, of course, Surviving Sissy, so that people who want to know about your life, that'll be in its second printing. They can get a copy of that. And in some ways, it's why I know so much of your background, because, of course, I've read the book and I know you go back to those childhood star days. But that's really fascinating because, of course, your latest book, which is called Ex-Child Stars, Where Are They Now? This really is a study and the story of child stars like yourself, but who have taken different paths going forward. Some good, some very successful like yours, but Kathy, some meeting with tragic end.
Yes, it is such a tragedy when the circumstances surrounding the stardom of some of these children just really go off the rails. And in this book, after I have chronicled their lives and what television series, this book is Ex-Child Stars, Where Are They Now?, which covers the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s decades. I have another book, Ex-Child Star, The Movies, which is its sequel, which will come out in probably a year. And at the summation for this present book, Ex-Child Stars, Where Are They Now?, I really sum up why some of those children were able to be successes, like Ron Howard or Brooke Shields, and some, like, unfortunately, the little girl that was on my television series, Family Affair, Anissa Jones, yeah, took an overdose, and her twin on the show, Jody, got involved in alcohol and drugs. So what were those circumstances that brought such differences to these children? And I point that out in the book.
And I want to talk about that with you. I should say that this book is almost encyclopedic in that if you are, as I am, a fan of shows going back to the 1950s and I Love Lucy, but all the way through, and it's organized this way to take you through the 60s and shows like Family Affair and Gentle Ben and through the 70s and the 80s, and the 90s, it just, you walk us through, actually, I guess the 80s is where we end, right? You walk us through what's happened to all of these people. So for me, it was great because while I was sort of starting to read the whole book from beginning to end, then I was looking ahead because I was thinking about, oh, certain people, certain stars that I wondered about. And I was able to kind of just look them up in the book as I looked ahead to some of those folks you wondered, whatever happened to? And we'll talk about some of them specifically, but let's just get to that general point. Can you identify what it is that led some of these child stars to keep control of their lives and some not? And there's a quote in the book that talks about, I think it might have been from Paul Peterson, who, of course, was in the Donna Reed show. The role of parents is so important as to what happens to these kids down the line.
Absolutely. Of paramount importance. If the family is supportive and behind the child and looks out for the welfare of the child rather than the welfare of the truck that may or may not be coming in, that makes a big difference. It makes a big difference if the parents aren't and look at their child as their bank, that anything that they make, the child makes, they can just go willy-nilly and withdraw whatever they want. Another big factor is education. Actually, a friend of mine had written a book, Glamour Gidgets and the Girl Next Door, chronicling who were those glamour gidgets like John Wells and myself and the Linda K. Henning. There were two of us that had graduated from college. And, you know, and that holds true, and it did. I think that more child stars might be going on to further their education, but so many of them aren't. So what happens is after they are the cute, darling little kid and they are hired for one of those reasons and they take direction well, then when they start 12 and 13 and they're not as cute as they were and then they are not hired after their series ends, it's very devastating. And not only that, they haven't developed the skills skills as also the life skills about how to handle things.
Well, you dedicate the book to Shirley Temple, and I thought, what a classic example. There's somebody who was the largest child star of her time, but then that was it. Went on to do great things, of course, but not as an actress.
Well, yes, and although I do say, like my judgment, perhaps, for what is a success as a child actor is not that they, you know, have to continue being a star as like Brooke Shields, you know, but perhaps they go into directing like Ronnie Howard. We have four or five, I hate to say this, Paul, since you are one of these categories, but a lot of them go on to be lawyers. And actor and being able to act, I think, is a big part of being a lawyer.
But you know what, but you also had some, and I was struck by this when I was reading, like from Leave It to Beaver, Ken Osmond, who played Eddie. What a great character. And of course, I didn't know this. I learned it from your book that he was only supposed to be in one episode and then, of course, was a hit and stayed on through the series. He went on to be a cop. I'd always heard that, but I always thought it was just a rumor. But he went on to be a cop. And then some other, I think Frank Bank went on to be an investment person. So what I'm sort of curious is that, too. You're somebody who stayed within the industry. I find it so strange when others, you know, sort of leave it to such a different world, like the law, like police officer. And there was, you had a couple of folks that went into law enforcement as well. What is it you think, and you know these folks, many of them, what is it that goes through their mind to say, I'm almost getting as far away from this as I can?
Well, I think that that's true. I think that they do go in that direction. And even Jay North, that was on Dennis the Menace, he became a security guard in a prison.
That's what I'm thinking of, yes.
That's getting pretty far afield from being acting, although you can act with a certain bravado when some big thug is coming at you, I'm sure. But I think that having worked so long, like I started at 6 and 7 years old, as did many of these child stars, they're tired of it. They don't want to do it anymore. And some of them can look back and say, hey, I was a success. You know, perhaps it wasn't, you know, of my own volition, but yes, I was a success, and people still look up to me, and I moved people, and, you know, I inspired people. So I think that could be some of the reason that they say, okay, I've done that, now what else can I do? And it can, you know, it is far afield. Maybe they want to be in control, you know, like some of the police officers, because they were not in control of their own lives when they were children. The parents were, the director was, their agent was, the publicist was, go here, go there, do this, do that. And they said, okay, I want to be in control now. And so that can be one of the reasons.
And, of course, when I look at the work of your very good friend, Paul Peterson, who founded the organization called A Minor Consideration, which I learned from your book, really got triggered by the, I'm assuming, the suicide of Rusty Hamer, who, of course, people who've been around as long as me remember from Make Room for Daddy. He died of a gunshot, but I assume it was a suicide. And that's what led Paul to sort of say there's something going on here with these young stars.
And he has done a wonderful job with his A Minor Consideration and passed some great legislation where a part of what the child makes while he is working has to be put aside now. It's called the Coogan Law. And
Jackie Coogan.
That's when Jackie Coogan had made so much money. You know, he was the highest paid star in Hollywood as a child. And when he was like 18 or all, he had no money, zero. And so Paul says, we're not going to have this happen again. As a matter of fact, we had a fundraiser, and it was at the Hollywood Museum, and it was for A Minor Consideration. Because people think, oh, well, they're child stars, and they're stars, and they don't need any money. Well, a lot of these kids don't have any money. Their parents spend it all, and really it's a pittance what is put away for them. So maybe 15% of everything that they had earned. Not to say that they didn't have the rest of that money, but they have to have at least that. So to help them make the transition, whether it is to learning how to become a cameraman or how to do the lights or how to direct or how to then go on to be a lawyer and help with scholarships, et cetera, So we had a fundraiser at the Hollywood Museum, which I thought was, you know, a great place to have it. It was the old Max Factor building. And there was an exhibit of memorabilia. Johnny Whitaker, who had done The Littlest Angel, had the Littlest Angel costume on exhibit. And I had a sissy scarf from Family Affair. And the ex-child star, current and former, signed pictures and memorabilia and their books, like ex-child stars, to help raise money for this really very worthwhile organization, nonprofit.
Oh, which is just great. And, you know, how did you define what made a child star? Like, when I was going through it, and I loved Burt Ward and Batman, but I didn't think of him as, when I thought, think child star, I was really thinking of children who do this. But so you obviously looked at people who were a little older than that, but still called them child stars, like Burt Ward.
Well, Burt Ward was a child star figure skater, and so that's why he was included. And I did have this discussion with my co-author, Fred Asher, and I said, well, you know, he was older, but he had quite a career as a figure skater. Same with Tony Dow. Tony Dow was a junior Olympic diver. So these
And now a sculptor, by the way.
Oh, yes. He has. We're doing a play together, Tony Dow and I, that Lloyd Schwartz, Sherwood Schwartz, that created Gilligan's Island. And Brady Bunch, Dinner at Five. But Tony Dow has lots of talents. A lot of these kids had talents in a lot of different areas, some that didn't, and those are the ones that had the worst time in trying to make their transition. But Burt was included because of his figure skating, and that's why.
Well, this is I want to talk about some other things. The book is Ex-Child Stars, Where Are They Now? By Kathy Garber and Fred Asher, with the foreword by Paul Peterson. I love who doesn't sit around and talk about whatever happened to, right? I mean, this is everybody wants to know. And of course, there's rumors and fake stories. And this is great because you go through each television series, you tell us about the show and then what happened to each of the child actors. And again, going back to the daddy of them all, which I Love Lucy, in terms of what happened. By the way, just very briefly for Keith Thibodeau, who played little Ricky, just tell folks as an example, what did he go on to do?
Well, Keith Thibodeau, who played Little Ricky, was discovered when he was like 3 years old with the Horace Heidt Orchestra, and he was this fabulous little drummer at three. And so he was just a shoe-in, it seems, for the Lucy show. So he had a little trouble himself as he got out of that particular character, and he formed a band, and then he actually had a revelation, and it became very Christian and got him off of his drugs, and he runs a ballet company with his wife in Tennessee and is just as happy as a little bear in a blanket.
So, which is very happy.
I don't know. Baby, yeah, if a bear is happy in a blanket or not, but it sounds warm and cozy.
Yeah, a bear should be happy in a blanket.
And, well, I would think just as our dogs.
I love it. Well, this is
our little dogs are very happy.
Right?
In
yes. Well, you know, and again, it's one of the things when I just look at your career, Kathy, and so it's just such a treasure to have you as a dear friend through the years, and you know, somebody who was somebody that I watched as a child star doing this, but then to really take your life and do all that you've done. So I want to take a moment and take a look at some other things. You're going to be in Chicago, and so you and I, in fact, will get to be performing on September 9th. I don't typically throw dates out here, but let's do that, over at the Annoyance Theater. We're going to perform some Mark Roberts Unsold Pilots.
Yes, I think this is going to be great. And see, I told you that lawyers are wonderful actors, Paul. So I think this is actually the first time I will see you on stage. And the pilots, I don't know if you've read the scripts yet. We just got them.
Yeah, I haven't.
And they're very interesting. And I love my character.
Oh, this is good. And you know, it's not just us. It's Tim Kazurinsky. And so, I mean, it's just some great folk. Mike Toomey, Chicago folks know him from WGN News. So some really great. That's going to be great fun on September 9th. And what's the event called? I forgot what's it called?
It's called Mark Roberts Unsold Pilot.
There you go. That's a good name for it. See, you know everything. I love that. And so we've got another printing of Ex-Child Stars coming out and another printing of Surviving Sissy. I really want to encourage people to read Surviving Sissy because your life has been, it's not just Family Affair. It's one of the reasons I had so much to say when I introduced you. People who only know you from that don't know you because you have done so many different things in the arts and outside the arts through the years that people really should check that out. You've got a Family Affair cookbook, which you need to cook me something from that cookbook coming up, I think. And
I will. That's a great idea.
That is a great. We'll use one of Mr. French's best dishes.
Yes, his gourmet delights.
I love it. And you're coming back to Chicago, so I'm going to hold you to it.
You got it.
All right. The book is Ex-Child Stars, Where Are They Now? It's by Kathy Garver, Fred Asher. Don't miss this. And pick up Surviving Sissy. Maybe if you get both of them on Amazon, they'll give you some deal. Who knows? But it's really, I just enjoyed it so much. Well, I enjoy really all the things you've written because I've read them all, and it's why I love talking to you about them. And I thank you for chatting with me and for our audience. And good luck with the next printings of these books and the next book to come, Ex-Childhood Stars from Movies. I can't wait for that one. Didn't even know that was coming.
Yep. Thank you so much, Paul. Always a delight to talk with you.
Same here. Thank you. Well, if you want to know more about what we've talked about here, follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Paul Lisnek. That's PaulLisnek. And I'd love to hear your comments or topic suggestions for future podcasts. You can also go to my website, paullisnek.tv. And hey, don't forget to hit subscribe on WGN Plus and iTunes. And tune in each week to hear more Insider Scoop coming to you from behind the curtain.